A very happy football Sunday to you, Buccaneers fans. The Bucs play Monday night, 7 o'clock. It's not the traditional 8:15 kickoff, so don't be that guy or that woman who turns on the TV at 8 o'clock getting ready for the Bucs game and it's halftime. Don't do it. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. This is the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Lee DeKemper is here with me. We're presented by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford dealers. They got great 0% offers going right now. They've got other low interest financing offers. Check them out. BillCurryFord.com. That's the website. Curry is the family name since 1960. Family owned. Third and fourth generation there right now. The Joe Bucks fan discount, Ira Kaufman discount, is always in effect, and that applies to anything. Reach out to Sean Sullivan, the general manager. Get in touch with him. He'll get it to you, and he'll also help you and talk football with you. Remember his best-in-class podcast at Apple Podcasts, and right here, he's our Joe Bucks fan draft guru. We'll talk more about Bill Curry Ford later. BillCurryFord.com. Now, this is a unique episode. We did two episodes earlier this week. This is sort of a bonus situation, and we hope you consider it a bonus. Ira is not on the episode. He took a little getaway, long weekend getaway. He'll be back Monday. We do have his picks, though, at the end of this segment. So Lee and I and Ira, often we do the Joe Bucks fan show on 95.3 WDAE and AM 620 in Tampa. We've been doing it for more than 6 months. It's every Saturday, but the times change. This week we did it on Sunday, and essentially what you're going to be listening to today is an edited version of that show with Ira at the end. So we got plenty to talk about. If you want to just listen to some Bucks talk and enjoy, we appreciate it. FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Go there now. Be aware of who you need to call whenever you have a disaster in your home. It doesn't have to be storm damage. It could be mold, which is a killer. And you need a licensed mold remediation specialist, not just some mold person. You need that expertise, and Florida's Elite Restoration has it. They've got 5-star Google reviews. We know their services and have used them. Don't take it from us, though. Go to those 5-star Google reviews, Florida's Elite Restoration. They handle fire damage, storm damage, flood, water damage. Ira's the water damage whisperer. All kinds of issues that can arise, and they do it with expertise, with honesty, and you can trust them. FloridasEliteRestoration.com. Owner Josh Martin has his own Ira Kaufman discount. You'll get $500 back if you mention Ira or Joe Bucks fan when you first call. After your very thorough free inspection, if you need their services, you'll get the discount if you sign on for them to restore your property. And they can do everything. They can get you a new bathroom if one's been destroyed. They're not just restoring. If you want them to do everything, they're a one-stop shop. FloridasEliteRestoration.com. All right, I'm jumping right in here with Lee DeKemper. We're chopping it up, as Ira would say. We're outdoors at Hooters, a little bit louder than usual. But again, we got the sage at the end. So if you don't want to listen to me and Lee, if you get sick of us, you get your Ira fix at the end. We make our picks. Go Bucks. And we got plenty to get into with this Texans game on Monday night. But one thing I wanted to bring up, because I don't think all this week it's been talked about enough. Graham Barton moving to left tackle and playing as well as he did with relatively short notice. Yeah, he played there at Duke as a left tackle, but he came to the Bucks as a center after playing center a little bit in college, not much, mostly his freshman year. But to go out there and just do very well, it just doesn't happen, and I feel like no one's talking about it nationally or even that much locally.
Well, I can tell you why people aren't talking about it nationally. Left tackles don't move the needle nationally. So that's why you rarely do you hear offensive line talk on national shows. Locally, maybe it's overshadowed because of the secrecy behind it, and the Bucks can spin it any way they want. That was choreographed. When the Bucks media relations department lets you guys know in Atlanta, simultaneously as Jason Light's talking on the pregame show, like if I know the setup, they're probably sitting right behind you for hours, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so they could easily have told you when you showed up, hey, Steve, by the way, we're going to start Graham Barton left tackle. No, they waited. That was all choreographed for whatever reason. At any rate, I got to believe one reason, and maybe this is being talked about, but it's overshadowing the juggling on the offensive line. The offense was not sharp. Now, you want to say week one, okay. You want to say Baker Mayfield didn't play any worthless preseason game, okay. I have to believe these guys getting less than 2 weeks of practice. You know, it's three new positions. Center, left guard, left tackle. I got to believe that had to be a factor in the offense struggling, especially in the first half.
You would think so, especially with the struggles in the running game. But you know what? The pass blocking overall was pretty good. They got some good blocks, some saving kind of blocks from Rashad White and Bucky Irving, but those were mostly on blitzes.
Bucky Irving, now that's a point you got. One thing for Graham Barton to make blocks. For Bucky Irving to make blocks, that's big, I think.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that he was covering for linemen. Most of that stuff
was
picking up blitzes, which he's supposed to do.
Yeah, but still, a little guy.
Bucky's always been willing. You know, Josh Grizzard actually talked on the Buccaneers Radio Network, heard right here on WDAE, about how Bucky's made that commitment and worked hard at it, and he's not Rashad White, but he's getting real good. And, you know, frankly, it's want to and being smart because, you know, hey, just because you're 5'8", 190 doesn't mean you can't slow somebody down.
Sure.
We've seen it through NFL history. But going back to Barton, the guy plays left tackle at Duke, and he's dominant, and everyone's talking about, hey, he's first-round caliber center, top two or three center in the draft, depending on who you talk to. And the Bucs took him in the first round. And the history of first-round centers hitting, as far as being successful in the league, is about 90% at the center position. It's considered, you know, you shouldn't screw it up if you're taking a first-round center. That's why so many are taken in the second and third round. So you look at this, though, and you look at Barton, whose agent and Barton himself are talked into believing that he's not a left tackle in the National Football League.
Yeah.
Now, left tackles are drafted higher. They make more money down the road, a lot more. And, you know, Barton listened to all the noise. He told me in the locker room after the game that, because I asked him about this, Lee, and he's like, well, you know, during these pre-draft meetings with teams, I was really preaching my versatility. I can, you know, telling him I can play left tackle. I can play center. I can play guard. You know, and of course, he's trying to sell himself. But at some point, you got to wonder if Graham Barton looks in the mirror, maybe it's this week, next week down the road, and says, man, I got bad advice because I can play left tackle. He's probably going to play at least two more games at left tackle. And I talked to somebody who really is an offensive line guru, studies the NFL deeply, and he told me that Graham Barton showed that he's better than a lot, was the quote, a lot of starting NFL left tackles.
So what you're suggesting is Barton is salivating about when he becomes a free agent. Like, either pay me left tackle money or I'm going bye-bye.
He's 23 years old. He's got a five-year deal as, you know, they have the fifth-year option on him. Doesn't mean he can't become the highest-paid center ever, and he's not an all-pro center yet. He's got a lot to improve, and he hasn't played there yet this year. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Looks like he's made that leap, and he's a big guy. 6'5". He's probably up to, like, 320, 325 right now. But, yeah, who knows what his future brings. But it's just fascinating how Jason Light, who's gotten a reputation for drafting small school tackles like
Gedeki,
for example, before Gedeki, Alex Kappa out of Division II made him a guard. And
well, even Malk was left tackle in college, right?
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, exactly. So the bottom line, now we've got a situation where Jason Light's done this, but it seems like the guy was also a tackle, too. I'm not saying he was ready to take the league over, but I just think it's really cool and really rare. Mm-hmm. Cameron Brate also talked on the Bucs Radio Network saying he had no words for a guy jumping from center out to left tackle and having no problem without much time.
It is rare. You know, like I said, even though he did well, and it's not just the Bucs, it's the NFL in general, it is pounded into our heads. It takes a while to gel for offensive linemen. They got to be together. It's communication. It doesn't happen overnight. Well, that was almost overnight with Graham Barton going to the left tackle. They had, what, seven practices? Because they had a long weekend off after the preseason game.
Yeah, when I asked Barton, the number he put out there was four.
Four practices.
I don't know if maybe he doesn't consider underwear football a practice.
Yeah, that's what I'm
you
thinking.
Never really know, but that was his number that he threw out there. Yeah, we had four practices. And
wow.
You know, so, and that was between the time the decision was made, which Barton told me was right after the last preseason game, to opening day. No, by NFL standards, it's getting thrown into the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that it was no big deal, even learning the plays. I asked him not the plays, but the role and making it instinctive for himself at left tackle. He's like, well, I'm at center. I know the playbook. It's not that simple, man.
I think at center, you pretty much have to know where everybody's doing.
Sure.
Yeah.
He does.
So.
But it's one thing to know where everybody's got to be and another thing to be able to do it in real time. You
yes.
know? I just have to throw the bouquets to him. Jason Light now, you could argue, and we did, and talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion before the season was that the Buccaneers' offensive line depth wasn't very good. And Todd Bowles had even said, we don't have a backup center. Remember, he was asked that. Well, all of a sudden, now we've got three guys, Barton, Michael Jordan, not that Michael Jordan, the left guard of the Bucs, and Ben Bredesen, three guys who have played a full game in what's their backup position, and they've gotten that experience, and they've put some time together. So it's like, all of a sudden, there is depth. All of a sudden, it's even has some experience. But on the flip side, you could argue, none of this happens if Charlie Heck doesn't suck. And they make a mistake, apparently, in choosing Charlie Heck.
Let's throw bouquets at Light for having these versatile offensive linemen. Let's throw bouquets at Barton for a seamless transition. Same with Bredesen. Same with Michael Jordan. But let's not discount the fact that they painted themselves into a corner. The coaches should have been able to figure out, after 2 weeks of training camp, after they put the pads on, within 2 weeks, they should have been able to figure out, either Heck can do it or Heck can't do it. And they waited until after preseason. That's not a good thing. Why did they not recognize this earlier? Why did Barton not get extra snaps in the preseason? That to me, is as much of a red flag as it is bouquets for everybody, you know, for all the pieces falling together properly.
It's very interesting because from a coaching standpoint, I believe NFL coaches or even like a high school coach would say, well, I got a little extra chance to see him in practice and we just chose what we thought would work out best. So that's our job.
Which is a cover.
I'm just saying they would say that's our job. The flip side is what you said. And what they would tell you at One Buck is that, hey, Charlie Heck, we still think he would be okay. We just thought these guys would be a lot better. But it was a huge gamble because you know, and I know, and every Bucs fan knows, and the NFL world knows that if the Bucs lost that game, which was a toss-up game, everybody would be laser pointing at the offensive line saying, what the heck were you doing? You threw it into chaos. You couldn't get your running game going. It was slow starting out, and it showed you lost by 3 points. There you go. They dodged a bullet from a perception standpoint, but there's positive there, too. It's fascinating.
You know what? Rondé Barber, I'm surprised you didn't bring this up yet. You wrote about it. Rondé Barber on his WFLA digital show, online-only show, basically said the Bucs were looking to replace Heck before training camp.
The quote was, Barber was clearly, you know, this show is co-produced by the Bucs. It's on FLA streaming. It's got Bucs sponsors. They're doing it. They gave him a show for the 50th anniversary year. And, you know, he sort of speaks his mind. But he got a little flustered. And he's like, look, quote, let's just be honest. Charlie Heck's feet are not good enough to deal with speed. They're just not. This guy's protecting Baker's blind side. Putting that guy on an island at any point did not seem good. And he goes on to say, quote, I'm just telling you now, this shakeup has been in the works for a month and a half.
Let me emphasize, that's a defensive back that said that. So where were the Bucs coaches? If he could see that, where were the Bucs coaches? Anyway, to make my point about Rondé, to reinforce what he said, if I remember correctly, didn't Jason Light openly talk about this Fant that used to play for Seattle that they were negotiating with?
Yes.
So I think that backs up what Rondé's saying. They were trying to replace Heck before training camp.
I'm not sure if Jason Light actually spoke about him directly, but he was asked and acknowledged that they were looking at guys. Mm-hmm. That you're talking about this established left tackle who was on the street. Doesn't mean he would have been better, but the Bucs dodged a bullet. They also built depth and confidence in their line, but it's also something to really wonder, especially with Rondé Barber out there saying that. I'm assuming Rondé's right, but I don't know. But I do know we'll be back right after the break with plenty more. We got a Bucs game tomorrow night, Monday Night Football. I love Monday Night Football, Lee, because when the Bucs play Monday night, it means we just get to kick back and watch football like a fan all day long on Sunday, soak in every last drop.
Guzzle a beer.
That's the voice of Lee DeCamper. I'm Steve Isbitz. We're JoeBucksFan.com. We are presented, thankfully and gratefully, by Bill Curry Ford. Don't worry, drive Curry. Bill Curry Ford is Tampa's first family of Ford dealerships. That means they've been around since 1960 in the community, serving everybody a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Still family-owned. They've got the Joe Bucks fan discount. Just ask General Manager Sean Sullivan for that. But more important, they're going to take incredible care of you. And you can check them out at BillCurryFord.com. Curry is the family name, C-U-R-R-I-E. All kinds of great 0% financing offers, mobile service. They'll do work at your home for no extra charge on your vehicle. BillCurryFord.com. So, Lee, we were talking before about the shakeup on the offensive line. And we assume, but we can't, I mean, we can assume any time we want, but you never know with the Bucks because they've been pulling a lot of surprises. But Monday night, the Bucks will face Danielle Hunter and Will Anderson. These are top shelf edge rushers. Hunter, I believe, on the NFL top 100 list voted by the players. People think all different things about that, whether it's legit or not. But bottom line is, I believe he was 28. This guy is an absolute animal. So Luke Goedeke may or may not have a bad foot. Didn't practice on Thursday. And we've got Graham Barton, we assume, at left tackle. It's a difficult matchup.
Here's what I can say about Goedeke that I saw with my own eyes. You know, red flags went off when I heard he didn't practice. So I was in practice. I was in the locker room, as were other Bucks media, Thursday afternoon. I saw Goedeke leave the locker room. I was near his locker. He walked right past me, and I followed him close. Not followed him, but looked at him closely.
You were stalking him.
Yeah, I was stalking. But I didn't follow him. I just stood there, but I watched him closely as he walked out the door. So you figure, you know, if a guy's got a bum foot, he can't practice. He's got his foot wrapped up. He's either in a boot, or he's walking with a cane, or walking with a crutch, or some sort of apparatus. Okay. There was no walker, like Tristan Wirfs was on a month or so ago. No cane, no boot, and I'm looking at his feet. No tape, no wrap. In fact, he was barefoot. In fact, he was wearing sandals. And a lineman with a hurt foot doesn't walk around too much in sandals barefoot. I'm not saying he's faking something. I'm not saying he doesn't have an injury of some sort, but it sure doesn't look major to me. I didn't see him limp either.
That's Dr. DeCamper. No.
I'm
kidding you.
I'm just seeing what I observed.
No, those are all good signs, obviously. You don't want to see something else. We just don't know. Is it sore? Did he get stomped on?
Maybe. Well, you reported, did you not, that it was a bruised top of his foot?
No, I didn't report that.
Okay, someone wrote that. So if that's the case, that would explain why his ankle's not wrapped up.
The Bucks have listed it as a foot. We'll see. But keep in mind, the Bucks are super careful. I think more careful than many teams when it comes to their linemen. Vita Vea had a foot issue before opening day. Todd Bowles gave some explanation that I didn't believe. It said, Vita woke up and his foot was messed up.
I know.
Okay.
That's like a fifth time that he said that. Somebody woke up and was hurt.
Did he, like, step on a Lego from his kid or something? Or who knows?
Jumped because he sat on a deposit from his dog and landed wrong?
Possible. But he played well, and he played about 70% of the snaps on Sunday. So I assume Goedeke is going to play. They can wrap it up, shoot it up, whatever it is, muscle strain, who knows. But this matchup, though, is one to really think about. It should change the Bucs offense for this week, because no matter how much Atlanta improved, that's still a bad pass rush by Atlanta. So this is a big challenge for the Bucs, and perhaps their biggest challenge is the night games. Now, nobody wants to talk about the night games.
Yeah, Mayfield snapped at me about asking about
Mayfield that. Snapped at you. He accused you of asking the same question twice about prepping for night games, but you really didn't ask the same question twice.
You had
a little different spin on the person who asked it previously, but Mayfield himself said last week on the Buccaneers Radio Network, he was sitting on the couch with Cameron Brate doing their thing, and he said, I don't like night games. I don't like them. And he just explained he doesn't deal well with the sitting around on Mondays. Mayfield's logic, or at least his explanation, was I've prepared so well that if it's Monday and I still need to look at stuff, I don't get anything out of it. Because if I find something that I didn't see before. That means I didn't prepare well enough, but I know I prepared well enough, and I just want to wake up, have my coffee, and go play.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the Bucks told him not to drink coffee when there's a Monday night game, but he said, I'm doing it anyway, which I thought was interesting, the sports science people. But he was not happy about the question to the media on Thursday, and Mayfield's 1-7 with the Bucks in a Bucks uniform at night. It's just not a coincidence.
No.
And here they are telling us that they're really going to do everything the same. I don't like it. I don't get it.
Well, just for a point of reference, this isn't uncommon, the Bucks struggle at night games. And Bruce Arians got so fed up with it. Didn't he have him practice at night leading up to a primetime game?
Pretty sure one time he did. Regardless, he made some scheduling tweaks.
Yes.
That's not what we're seeing here.
No. And like you said, 1-7, you should adjust your preparation if you're 1-7. Somebody's doing something wrong. Whether it's Bowles, Mayfield, whomever. Something's not right. By the way, it's not a real revelation to me that Mayfield doesn't like night games. A lot of NFL players don't like night games. They talk about they got to sit around in a hotel room. Now, you know, they're on the road this time. Do they still use a team hotel for home games?
They do.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I get that. They got to sit around a hotel room. At least they're not on the road doing that. So I understand that. But 1-7, that's unacceptable. That's not, especially for a team that has plans to make a playoff run. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, because you have to be able to play well at night in the playoffs. And by
you're eventually going to play one at night.
By the way, the Super Bowl's at night.
Yes.
And you know, I'm not blasting Mayfield here, but
no.
His attitude seems a little bit off. Like, it feels like he feels like the whole team, the whole organization should have been studying this all offseason.
Oh, 2 years ago.
To figure out what's going wrong at night. If for no other reason than to just get into the players' heads and, hey, we're doing these three things different and we agreed on them and we like them and we think it's going to help. I just double checked. Yes, last year's playoff game was an 8 o'clock start against the Commanders. So, you know, last year the Bucks went to Dallas and they blew it in a critical game.
Yes.
And at night, I don't know. There's got to be something there. And we're fans first more than anything else. Granted, we're covering the team 24/7, but I just hope they find a fix. Something's got to be fixed here. And if they do lose Monday night, that they use that opportunity to address it. I think it would be helpful to everybody, and it can't continue. You can't just, and that's one reason the Bucks have lost so much, haven't gotten the respect that they've deserved in the national media the last few years, despite making the playoffs and even winning a playoff game. Because whenever they're on in primetime, they get clobbered.
Bingo. When everybody's watching, they play like crap. And that's a major reason why they don't get the respect they think they deserve. Because when everybody's watching, when they're on the biggest stage, they lay an egg.
Looking at Monday and Mayfield himself, since we sort of roped him into this Monday night failure or issues that they've had, do you see him coming out sharper this game? Do you believe last game his issues early were rust versus something else?
I want to say rust for a couple of reasons. One, obviously he didn't throw a pass in a worthless preseason game. But overall, offense is down in the NFL. And we know more and more every year, coaches are coming to the conclusion their starters should not be playing in preseason games. So I'm hoping that's just a league-wide trend, not just a Bucks trend. Because of that, I'm hopeful that the offense will look better. I think it will, because once again, Barton will have a game under his belt. Michael Jordan, not that Michael Jordan, will have a game under his belt. Bredesen will have a game under his belt at new positions. Mayfield obviously has some, and honestly, he got better as the game went on. He was rusty, no question about it, that first half. Second half, how could you argue? Especially in clutch time. So I'm hopeful that I think the Bucks and Mayfield will be better offensively.
Yeah, the Houston defense gets a lot of love for being good, and they are good, but they're not great. It's not a great defense.
Not great, but they, again, good, and they have a good defensive coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, of course, you know, throw that in the mix, and then 2 years ago, it was a wild, as Bruce Arians would say, a wild-ass shootout in Houston. The Bucks lost that game. Mike Evans actually said it was one of the toughest losses of his career.
Wow.
That he's typically not angry after a loss, but that one killed him. The Bucks, just a back-and-forth shootout.
Because that was back home for him.
Back home for him, and just the way they lost that game.
On Thursday, It was kind of a wake-up call for Bucks fans, I think. It was a wake-up call for me. Evans comes out. He's like, yeah, this might be my last game in Houston. And that was like a reality jolt. It's like, oh, yeah, we don't know if he's going to be back next year. And now I know there was a commenter on Joe Bucks fans like, oh, what the hell? So what? Houston, you could say that about this game and that game. Well, Evans never lived in New York. He never lived in where he's at. That's his hometown, Houston. So, but that was like a jolt of reality to me. Like, wow, he's coming close to the end.
Yeah, look, every game's like that for LaVonne David, too. But I think...
Well, they're not playing in Miami, are they?
They are.
Okay, well, that would be it for him.
Sure.
Yeah.
But for Evans, it sort of drove home the point to me that this game, an hour from his hometown, means a lot to him. Hope your fantasy football team does well today. Hope you get to enjoy all this beautiful football and then settle in for an early start. 7 o'clock Monday Night Football, Buccaneers at the Texans. Of course, there's the late game. I love the Monday Night Football doubleheader. It's the best time of year for football, you know, between college kicking off and all the games. Lee, it's just a beautiful thing.
It still irritates. Now, we can enjoy both games Monday night because we're working. I understand why ESPN does this and the NFL. It still irks me to no end that they lap these two games against each other instead of having... One start at 6 o'clock, ends at 9 o'clock, kickoff for the second game at 9:30. Drives me nuts, but I understand why they do it. They get more viewers that way. Irritating as hell, but...
It's working for them, so that's
all about the Benjamins.
That's what it's all about. Bruce Arians is now on the Pat McAfee show every Tuesday on ESPN2. So they do their show, and he chimes in on everything NFL. They've got a fun little series that where they ask him... And he says whether something's BS or it's not. And then at the end of the show, they cut off. And then they go to the after show.
Where Aaron's can cuss.
Which is all extra foul language and all that. This is not a good thing for the Buccaneers. We love it. It's great for fans. But bottom line is, Arians is on the Bucs payroll as a special advisor to the general manager. Now, the Bucs like to joke that he doesn't do anything.
But we know that's not true.
But why is he still on the payroll if he's not doing anything? Why are
Bingo.
They? Is it just to like save face or something? But now he's in the media, and I'm sure he's being paid very handsomely to do this. And he was on the air last week after the Bucs won, and he was saying that they were down two starting cornerbacks. Mm-hmm. Two. Now it makes you wonder, okay, who are these two starting cornerbacks? Mm-hmm. Did Arians get it wrong? Did he mean to say one? But he said two. So there's rookie Benjamin Morrison, the second-round pick, who should be eligible to play Monday night to his debut. He didn't play in the preseason. And then there's Christian Izian, who has played a lot of nickel for the Bucs, who has been out with an oblique injury, and now he's supposed to be back on Monday night. Do you think Arians was really tipping off that the Bucs plan to yank Jamel Dean from the starting lineup as soon as they can?
Well, I know a lot of fans want that, and maybe they do. I don't know. You know, and I'm not making fun of Bucs fans when I say this. Maybe it's this way with other teams. I don't cover other teams. I cover the Bucs. I see the comments. I hear the radio. Jamel Dean is this year's whipping boy. May have been the whipping boy last year. Every year, there has to be a player that Bucs fans pile on, no matter what. No matter what. And I think there's so much celebration out there that all the signs point to Dean either getting benched or this is his last year. One of the two. I'm assuming it's Dean because all the breadcrumbs out there suggest it's Dean. You know, they just dropped a bunch of money in McCollum's lap. Dean got a pay cut. He got a contract cut. He's going to be a free agent this spring. They spent money on draft picks, second-day draft picks. They didn't do that just for special teams. They did that so these guys are on the field. Thursday, Todd Bowles said, well, if Benjamin Morrison plays, it won't be inside, meaning he won't be playing slot corner. All the signs point to Dean, unless you want to make an argument, this is an elaborate motivational tactic to get Dean off his rear end.
Yeah, it was rather interesting in the Falcons game, a minute and change, no, excuse me, 16 seconds left.
Oh.
And Dean trips in coverage, and Antoine Winfield Jr.
saved his ass.
Does his job, saves his bacon, blows up the play, and that's it. Now, it's interesting. I've heard some people say, they're a little nuts, but I've heard some people say, if Winfield just let him catch the ball and tackle him, the game would have been over. Because
yeah.
Which is ridiculous. But think about that. Dean tripped. Bowles,
the guy was wide open. He was wide open.
Crunch time, guy tripped, and then Bowles is in general is telling us what a great game Dean played, and
except for two plays.
Except for two plays.
Maybe that was one of those two.
Well, one of them was a face mask.
Yeah,
bad face mask penalty, and you know he didn't have the greatest game. I'm sorry, he just didn't. And I think Arians was just being truthful there.
Yeah,
essentially saying Morrison's going to play.
Well, and again, they didn't spend a second-round draft pick on Morrison just so he can play special teams.
No, of course not. But it may have been a way to squeeze Jamel Dean to cut a lot of money.
Yeah, we don't know when that when he redid his contract. We don't know when that was.
I mean, that negotiation could have started in
the day after the draft.
Now, it was done before the season started because those are the NFL rules, which is why they slam all these contract extensions in before opening kickoff and stuff. But it's a very interesting situation with Jamel Dean as it relates to what the Bucs truly think about the guy.
Well, Ira has said, and we know Ira's contacts are excellent, and we know who he talks to.
And you're talking about the great Ira Kaufman?
The custodian of Canton, the sage of Tampa Bay sports. He said there's mixed reaction about Dean inside the building. I think I could be polite and say that.
Yeah, he said that, told us that before last year. So before the 2024 season, he said not everybody in the building is sold on Dean. It's kind of a split decision. He's Todd Bowles' guy. So, I don't know. You know, Rondae Barber, obviously very well connected, works for the Bucs, knows the cornerback position very well. On his WFLA show, he was absolutely hammering Servacié Denis and his play.
He should have been hammered.
And explained why in great detail. And he also talked about Dean and the pay cut, but he said that Dean is going to be in very big demand in free agency after this season. He wasn't hard on Dean. He wasn't hard on Dean. He was basically like, hey, you're in a prove-it situation. You got guys screaming down your neck in the rookies. Go prove it. Go play well. He wasn't lauding Dean as a legendary player, but he did say he'd have a huge market in free agency after this season.
Now, I can only say what I see. I can't remember last time I missed a training camp practice. I'm not saying Dean's Deion Sanders. Not even close. Please don't get me wrong. I don't know that he's a Pro Bowler. But on a down-per-down basis, specifically when he goes up against Mike Evans, he's the Bucs' best corner. I'm flat-out saying that. Mike Evans has a battle on his hands when he goes up against Dean.
You think that could just be a function of Dean knows him so well, knows his moves, been covering him for 6 years?
Not just that, but just like in baseball, there's always some two-bit pitcher that a batter can't buy a hit off of, and vice versa. There's some two-bit hitter that just owns a pitcher, a real good pitcher. So maybe it's just a matchup issue that Dean matches up really well with Evans, but he does cover Evans really, really well. Evans has a battle on his hands. When McCollum goes up against Evans, it's 50-50. Sometimes McCollum makes a hell of a play. Sometimes Evans eats him up. And based on that, he's their best cornerback. Now, he may be doing something totally different in games that I'm not catching, but just my eyeball test in training camp, he looks to be the best corner they have. Now, I'm not talking about interceptions. He can't catch. Our good friend Sheldon Sullivan, I talked to him earlier this week, outraged at all the dropped interceptions. And my standard comeback is, if they can catch, they'd be receivers.
Staying on the secondary, Bowles said that Winfield, he could see in the film that the Falcons were playing away from Winfield. And
I thought
that was very interesting because you would think after the season Winfield had last year that they would test him. But they really didn't. And I thought that was tremendous respect. We'll see how Houston handles it, if they're willing to test Winfield and push him. Because going back to look at it after Bowles made those comments, you can sort of tell, they're not trying to keep Winfield out of position to make plays. Turned out he made the biggest one in the game. But it's a good sign, but I also want to see Winfield take advantage of when a team, maybe Texas, goes after him in a different kind of way. They have a totally different style of receiving core, and I think he'll be more tested in this game.
I'm glad to see that Winfield's, at least with one play, he's back to his all-pro self.
Yeah, that was huge. That was
monster. That's the difference in the game.
It's just the kind of stuff he was doing when he was great, and it was the kind of stuff he was missing when he wasn't. Made one of the biggest unbelievable non-plays that he made last year, which spoke to his injury. Pat Mahomes threw a deep pass Winfield was back there waiting for the interception and just being really passive. And a guy on the Chiefs jumped right in front of him, caught the ball. That was like a 40-yard pass. And it just was so non-Antoine Winfield. Mm-hmm. But it looks like we finally got him back. We got plenty to talk about, Lee, when it comes to Winfield and how the Bucs are going to approach. And I think it starts really on getting back to Bucs football, which this team would tell you that the offense runs through Mike Evans, and it's all about the running game, those two things. And we didn't necessarily see that against Atlanta, and they were still able to win, mm-hmm. which was really what made it so huge as a victory when you're looking for positives. Yeah, it was ugly. Yeah, we missed kicks. Yeah,
they got the job done.
But they did enough without being able to really run the core of their offense, which is by far the strength of the team, because at the end of the day, I believe total dropbacks for Michael Penix, total dropbacks was like 45 or 46. Mm. The Bucs sacked him once. And I looked up the percentages in the league. I believe that was bottom four, fourth worst for sack percentage. That won't get you anywhere in the playoffs.
No. Well, what I thought was very interesting, because I was very curious about this. So when the locker room opened up on Thursday, I immediately went to this guy, Yaya Diaby. I love Diaby. I don't know. Right now, I would say he's a Leonard Floyd type player, meaning you can't bank on double-digit sacks, but you should be able to bank on 7 or 8. I thought, sure, with Reddick coming in, that Vita Vea is a problem, Kalijah Kansey's a problem, and you bring Reddick in on top of that, you can't double-team everybody. So I thought Reddick was going to draw some flack. I thought Vea was going to draw flack. I thought Kansey was going to draw a flack, which means Diaby would get more single coverage. So I asked him, were you getting hit less? Were you getting less chips? Were you getting less double-team? He goes, I didn't see that at all. He goes, I was getting chipped all the time. So it's almost like Atlanta didn't respect Reddick.
Yeah, I get it. You know, I don't know what Vea was I don't know what Diaby was expecting, but
I just thought that was wild.
Reddick, to his credit, his sack came when he busted a double-team.
Yep.
Just, you know, blew right through it. We'll see what this Bucs pass rush really is, because they need it. No matter what, they need it. The blitz wasn't getting home against Penix either, which is really the hallmark of the defense. We'll be back.
Yeah.
Final segment coming up. We encourage everybody. Bill Curry Ford is open on Sunday. Tampa's first family of Ford dealers. Don't worry. Drive Curry. They're a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on the east side. And you can check out all of their incredible offers right now at BillCurryFord.com. They've also got express service available on Sunday, and they've got mobile service available at your home. They'll come right out to your property, work on your vehicle for no extra charge, and they'll even bring it back to the shop and get you a loaner if that's what it takes for no extra charge. Check it all out, BillCurryFord.com. Buccaneers going to Houston. Lee, the Texans, I watched that game against the Rams. You know, the Texans' weak spot, surprising to some last year, was offense. They didn't score. They didn't have much there. The defense,
no offensive line, no running game.
They just had a whole lot of not much.
A lot of injuries to the receivers.
Yeah, so this is a real opportunity for the Bucs to get the daylight that they need in the division, not just to win it. I'm looking toward having that room at the end of the season to rest a Lavonte David, because you got a 3-game lead with 2 to play. You know, get some guys healthy and not push it. And it's something this team hasn't had before. Todd Bowles also hasn't been willing to do that in past years.
No, it might have cost him Godwin last year.
And this is what they're playing for in my mind, because I did watch the Saints and the Cardinals last week. The Saints looked better than the Panthers at the Jaguars.
Wow.
The Saints were battling, and the score put the game a little bit closer than it really was, but they lost by 1 score hosting Arizona. Kyler Murray took a horrible sack at the wrong time, and the Saints got the ball back, and they could have tied it up. So Spencer Rattler, be battles. But Carolina looked like straight garbage. They had nothing. And I don't see either of those teams having a chance to stay within 10 points of the Bucs. And you look at Atlanta, we know what they're all about to a degree right now. The Bucs have got to have a 4-game lead later this year to give them all these opportunities to work on their game and fine-tune it for the playoffs, from injuries and whatnot. And this is a winnable game Monday, and I think they got to win it.
A winnable game for a good team.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily think the Bucks looked good last week. They had a couple of good drives where they looked good. They got, you know, like I said, you and I talked about it earlier. They got bailed out by Winfield. There's no other way around it. They got bailed out by Winfield. They lose that game, Winfield doesn't knock that ball loose. If the Bucks are a good team, that's a winnable game. If they lose this team, this game, I can't say the Bucks are a bad team, but there's cracks. What I think would be great, you know, the offensive line's makeshift. They had no running game last week. Mayfield looked rusty for most of the game. He obviously missed a big pass to Kate Otten. That Otten was wide ass open. That might have been six. If they're able to play crappy ball and still win and still beat a decent team on the road, that's a very good sign.
Yeah, speaking of the running game, now I did the homework on this. Rashad White, he had two carries against Atlanta, back-to-back, 11-yard carry and a 3-yard run. And that was early in the second quarter. He never got another handoff. Now, considering how poorly the Bucks ran the ball all day.
Why not try him more?
11 and 3 yards was a damn good sequence for them. And he didn't get the ball. He got one pass, which a guy made a great tackle. It was like a...
From behind by the angle, right?
Yeah, made a great tackle.
And he would have busted that.
He would have busted it. So those were his three touches. The last time Rashad White had only three touches in a football game, or less than three touches. No, sorry. The last time he had anything less than four touches was the third game of his rookie year. Even last year, even when Bucky Irving had sort of emerged as the number one guy, he still always had more than that. And most of the time, significantly, I thought that was a huge piece of the offense that they just left on the floor.
Not just that. I thought he should have been more involved in the pass game.
Yeah. Total touches. He had one pass. We hammered and slapped around Rashad White for a couple of years.
Yeah, because he couldn't run.
Because he couldn't run, and a running back who can't run is...
it's like a receiver who can't catch.
Is a corner who can't cover, and a safety who can't tackle. But last year, Rashad White proved himself.
Yes.
He ran for 4.3 yards a carry, and he was better. His pass blocking is excellent. He can catch the ball with the best of them.
Yes.
He was third in the NFL in catch percentage behind, I forget who was number one, Bucky Irving. Was number two, and he had great hands the previous year when he was even more dangerous. The guy had 9 touchdowns last year. 9.
Yeah.
He is a focal point of the offense, whether you like it or not, and they didn't use him. I think that's a major thing that has to be fixed.
The only reason why I'm not really stressed out about the offense is league-wide, the offenses were bad week one. So I'm willing to, okay, let's see what happens in week two. Everybody had hopes for Gazzard. And by the way, third down offense was very good, just like last year. But I was hoping, you know, I'm not saying I wanted the mirror image offenses, Liam Cohn, but since Grizzard sort of grew up with Cohn that 1 year with the Bucks, I was hoping for more. We didn't see it. Again, I don't know if that was because of the offensive line. I don't know if that was because of guys that, you know, just didn't have enough snaps. They didn't have any preseason snaps. I don't know what that is, but I'm willing to, again, I'm repetitive about this, but it's league-wide offenses were down, so I'm willing to be patient here.
Has this made you rethink guys playing in preseason?
No. I fundamentally am against that because I don't believe, especially with the investment that owners have in players, that you could F up your entire season by playing guys for no good reason. I mean, there's no reason to have these games. If you need the money that bad, go to the 18 games. Go to 20 games. I don't believe in playing games where there's no benefit. And that's the fundamental issue with me. I would rather see more regular season games than these garbage preseason games. That's just me.
That's fine. And a lot of sports would say it's okay to start slow. That's how the sport is. You know, teams get in a rhythm. Yeah. But the NFL, of course, is unique because it's a shorter schedule. But if you lengthen the schedule, then it might make more sense to have an understanding that, hey, week one is going to be a little messy and guys can coach around it. An important number or important to realize for Monday's game, tomorrow night, the Rams are a top rushing team in the NFL. Okay, they've got Kieran Williams. They're an excellent rushing team. They also have a very similar offense to the Bucks. It's all from that Sean McVay tree. Yeah. Josh Grizzard made a few tweaks, but it's still that offense. And the Rams ran for 2.9 yards a carry, and that was from their running backs. They didn't have the benefit of Baker Mayfield running for 39 yards. Matthew Stafford can't move. So they didn't run against the Texans. And here come the Bucks, who couldn't run with their running backs. I would have liked to see more of Rashad White. But, you know, if the Texans, I think they're going to focus on stopping the run and put a lot of pressure on Mayfield to not throw picks. It's more of a ball-hawking unit for the Texans. And, you know, Abuka, they needed him to come up big, and they're probably going to need him to do it again.
Well, here's what I don't know when you're comparing, okay, here's what the Texans did against the Rams. Was Matthew Stafford hurt to the point where the Texans just said, screw it, we're not going to worry about Stafford. We're going all out against the run.
No, Stafford played very well.
Okay.
Yeah. I think he was like 21 of 30 and threw for, he's on my fantasy team, but I didn't use him. He threw for like 250 yards. He looked okay.
Okay.
He looked healthy. And he said he came out fine, not on the injury report, you know, so.
Okay.
Looked legitimate, but he definitely didn't want to get hit. You know, we've seen that.
A little bit ago, we were talking about the Texans offense, and it appears, we don't know yet, but it appears they're going to have a new center. I'm really, really interested to see what a backup center does against Vita Vea.
Yeah, and we've seen that before. That you got to take advantage of it.
Yes.
Right? That's what it comes down to. Hassan Reddick was mostly up against the third string right tackle.
And he didn't do a whole lot.
He did okay, but
yeah, not a whole lot.
He didn't change the game.
No.
Let's put it that way.
I.E. Hutchinson last year against,
right.
Yeah.
Against Justin School.
Yeah.
Who
went bananas.
He was the Bucs' backup left swing tackle last year. He played four or five games for Luke Getteke. And when he came in his first game, right tackle against the Lions, Aiden Hutchinson, I think it was 3 sacks in the first half.
Went bananas.
And he went absolutely bananas.
Thankfully a loss for them.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff you want to see.
Yeah.
I was talking with somebody at the Bucs whose name will remain nameless. He said, hey, just finished watching Justin School for the Vikings. He started at left tackle. They have an injury there the other night, and he didn't look so good. So, Bucs fans, remember, not as great as you might have thought.
Yeah, with Charlie Heck getting benched. What'd you let the school go for? So, all of a sudden, he's the next Tristan Wirfs.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm as guilty of that as anybody, so.
A fun fact, I know, is one of your favorite players of all time. I'll wait for you to finish that drink before I tell you. Still on the Texans is Dare Ogunbowale, the third down back with Jameis Winston in 2019. A guy who just wasn't very good, but he could always play special teams.
That's why he's got a job.
He's still got a job with Houston. A lot of fans liked him. Really nice guy. And, of course, Bucs fans will remember Ogunbowale against the Texans 2 years ago. Their kicker got injured. They used him as an emergency kicker against the Bucs, and he kicked like a 30-something yarder with no NFL kicking experience whatsoever.
Well, since you brought up the topic of stiff ex-Bucs still in the league, did you notice that Snoop Dogg McPlaybook, otherwise known as Jeremy McNichols, was playing for the playing for the Commanders?
Well, he's hung around a long time, and he's contributed. Joe Tryon-Soyinka, four snaps. The Browns evaluated him, watched him play. They just got four snaps.
They did a Charlie Heck on him, didn't he? And he was supposed to start at the last second. You're not starting.
For those people missing Joe Tryon-Soyinka.
All three of them?
Yeah. He got one snap for each of you. So, all right, Sage is checking in with his pick for Monday night. Now, Ira, you've had a chance to look at this, and Texans coming off a loss. Spread is tight. Bucks slightly favored, but toss-up kind of game. You got it right last week. You picked a 11-point win for the Bucks, but it was obviously a much tighter. But you're 1-0, along with Lee. I'm 0-1.
Well, maybe I get an 11-point if McLaughlin knows what he's doing now.
Yeah.
All right. I give the Bucks a B- for winning in Atlanta, but not with great style. And I think Texan fans would give Houston a D or an F off their first game. Unimpressive, Steve. They're not a prolific offense, Houston. They don't have an inordinate amount of weapons. And I think most of our concerns are on the Bucs defensive side of the ball. And we figured, the Bucs, you know, they always score 20 points or more, which I think they were held under 20 once last season. That's Liam Cohen, I understand. But once out of 18 games, once. That's a good record. They reached it again in Atlanta. So I'm picking the Bucs to go 2-0. I think they can go in on primetime. They don't have a great primetime record. But Bowles ain't bad the second week of the season either, overall. 23-20 Bucs on a McLaughlin field goal.
And one question for you on that, Ira. What improves, if anything, about the Bucs defense to win this game and hold Houston at 20 at home?
Well, I said they were going to get two interceptions off Penix. They didn't, although Bowles thinks they should have had two or three. Stroud's going to throw a couple against the Bucs. McCollum's going to get his hands on one, and so's Lavonne David. Two interceptions for the Bucs.
All right, take it to the bank.
I'll be a homer. I'll say the Bucs find a way to win, and very likely Mike Evans' final game in his hometown. The Bucs win. Now, someone told me I had the exact score right last week. I didn't remember. I knew I said the Bucs win by a field goal.
We'll double check it.
If that's true, I hope it's 2 weeks in a row. I'll say 24-21 Bucs.
If you got the score right, I'll buy you a beer. It's hard to nail the exact score. I think the Bucs offense comes alive. It may be scary, a little ugly, but I think it'll be explosive with a turnover or two. But I'm going to go Bucs 28, Houston 21. And we're out of here on the Joe Bucs Fan Show. We'll see you on Saturday. Go Bucs.